Today on CityCast Chicago, votes from Tuesday's primary election are still being counted. The city denies DNC protest permits. And now that we've seen the Lala lineup, are we feeling it? I'll get all those answers and more from my friends, freelance writer Natalie Christian Frazier and Block Club Chicago's Melody Mercado. It's Friday, March 22nd. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is What Chicago's Talking About. Good morning, Natalie. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Jacoby.
No, I'm glad to have you here. You got a new last name since last time I saw you on the podcast, my G.
Yeah, I'm a married woman.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Melody, welcome back to the podcast. Good to see you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Let's get things started with, you know, kind of some light conversation. Earlier this week in our newsletter editor, Sydney Madden, put together a list of some of her favorite and some of the best coffee shops around the city of Chicago. But I wanted to ask y'all, what are some of y'all favorite coffee shops, or if you got a favorite spot? Natalie, I'm going to start with you. Where's your go-to coffee shop?
Yeah, man. Let me shout out Muse Coffee on the west side. Really cool spot. Black-owned. Shout out to George. I like to get the lavender matcha latte when I'm there. They got a cool art gallery in the back. They got a book club as well. So just a super cool spot.
Muse Coffee Studio on the west side. Shout out to them. Melody, what about you? Where's the spot you like to stop into?
Yeah, I got a couple spots. I live in Humble Park, so I really like Tassa Coffee. They are newer, but not totally new. They've been in the neighborhood for about almost over a year now. They're Latin owned. They do offer their space to the community, which I really like. And they're always playing the reggaeton bops, which I always appreciate. And their food is fire. They got tamales on the weekend. I highly recommend y'all check it out. And then since I do cover downtown and West Loop, I do stop in Froth, which is near Skinner Park, pretty frequently to lock down and write stuff. They got a great sandwich menu, really good BLT, and just some really good coffee options.
So Froth and Tassa Coffee Roasters, those are two of your spots you want to put people on. Mm-hmm. One that I had a meeting in maybe like a week ago that I had never been in was Sweet Bean in the South Loop. And man, I walked in there and I didn't expect to see so many pastries and desserts and breads like laid out in the store. And I just went and kept it simple and grabbed those lemon glazed Madelines. Ooh, and a passion fruit lemonade. Ooh, I'm going to be back in there, Joe. I'm going to be back in there. So we'll drop links in our show notes to the place we just list, but also to our newsletter article as well. And you can keep up with some of our best of food and drink lists by heading over to our website, chicago.citycast.fm. If you're new to the podcast, or if you've been here for the last 3 years, because this week we celebrated our 3-year anniversary at CityCast Chicago. And since the very beginning on Fridays, we like to bring in some of our friends from around the city, some crucial voices, and ask them what were the stories they were following this week, right? The stories that made headlines, the stories that need more attention. And of course, at the end of the show, we're going to ask them some good news. I'm feeling good this morning. This is going to be a good episode, y'all. The story we got to start off with is the huge binding referendum that was on all of our ballots during the Tuesday primary election. And that was Bring Chicago Home, the tax referendum that would, if passed, raise the real estate transfer tax on property sales over $1 million, lower the real estate transfer tax sales on properties under $1 million, and use the revenue to fund resource programs as well as services and affordable housing for people experiencing housing insecurity as well as homelessness in our city. While there are thousands of ballots still being counted, the Bring Chicago Home referendum is currently losing by about 20,000 votes last time I checked, meaning that of the Chicagoans who turned out to the polls, the measure seems to be rejected. Natalie, you have been following this fight for years and you were working at the polls on Tuesday. What were your thoughts seeing the current results as Bring Chicago Home, no votes, currently outpaced the yes votes?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, it definitely looked bleak last night, but, you know, I think there's still a lot of ballots to be counted. I know, you know, just working the polls, there was just a lot of misinformation. And so I think, you know, the ground campaign, I think, you know, Bring Chicago Home did a really good job. I think turnout was very low. I mean, in my precinct, you know, we got like 100 voters, you know, the whole days. And I think we can blame some of that on, you know, just what we have as far as the presidential primary, not exciting candidates. Folks are, you know, really, you know, apathetic. They're not interested in that race. And so I think Bring Chicago Home is having to deal with a little bit of that. But I also just want to acknowledge this is a decades long fight, right? And we just keep notching, you know, more building blocks on this fight. So, you know, even if it doesn't get passed, I think that, you know, when we eventually get some legislation on the ballot, like this will just be another stepping stone towards that.
Natalie, while you were at the polls, what were you hearing from people? Because, gee, I had this moment. I'm going to keep it real. I walked into the booth on Tuesday and I looked at the question and I had been preparing for months now. I had been to the website. We've done episodes. We covered it. And I looked at that three-part question, G, and of course, Bring Chicago Home is nowhere on there. And I was just like, oh, damn, this thing is dense. All these numbers are dense. What were you seeing and hearing from people at the polls as they were going in?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to first and foremost say that the question was worded terribly. It was worded terribly. I didn't love the way that it was worded at all. And I think secondly, you know, voting, you know, can be tough, especially for folks, you know, in the precinct that I was working in, right? Folks have jobs, you know, folks, you know, we just had like the redistricting of like the different precincts in our ward, you know, a year ago. People still are trying to figure out the voting thing in North Lawndale specifically. So a lot of folks, especially on the west side, were like, hey, I'm coming to vote. You know, I know the presidential primary. I understand that. The other things, I don't feel like I have the information to make an informed vote. So I saw a lot of folks who just didn't feel like they were informed enough. And taxes, that's just a scary word for a lot of folks, especially underserved communities, right? You don't want your taxes to go up, especially when you don't feel like you're receiving services and things for that tax hike.
Yeah. Melody, as those maps started to roll in to say, like, you know, where people were largely voting yes in support of the referendum, where people were voting no, that map started to look like a whole bunch of other maps of the city of Chicago, that if you just drop them things right on top of each other, one after one after one, right, you start to see where people were voting against it, where people weren't. And you covered the loop largely, right? And that thing, a large swath of that, where you're seeing million-dollar property sales happening, people were rejecting the referendum. As you've covered this over the last few months and even on Tuesday, what are your thoughts?
I think, first off, that this sort of shows how successful the Bring Chicago Home initiative was, because we have to remind everyone that the majority of Chicago supports graduated income tax.
Yep. 70% in that last election.
Right. I feel like that's something that essentially was easier to understand than the three-part question on Bring Chicago Home. There was a lot of money put into this anti-Bring Chicago Home campaign, and they ran ads and commercials everywhere. And so if you are automatically hearing, oh, this is going to affect you as a renter, or, oh, you know, this is not good for you, and that's all the news that you're consuming, and you're not really reading about what the referendum actually was about, it's easy to head into the polls and see that question and either one, skip it, or two, just say no.
Yeah. Like I said at the very top, there are still, you know, ballots to be counted, outstanding ballots. Official results will not be certified until April 2nd. And we'll learn more according to the Chicago Board of Elections tonight. Another race that we are watching that was even closer was the Cook County State's Attorney's race. The campaigns for both candidates, Eileen O'Neill Burke and Clayton Harris III, have requested to review ballot processing through the counting period. It's not that unusual. So we will continue to follow those results and provide more for you at our website and our newsletter, Hey Chicago. And you can learn more, especially at places like Block Club Chicago. Melody, of all of the congressional races, of all 17 races in Illinois, most of them snooze. Most people was running unopposed in a party. Some were running unopposed outright. But one race that got a lot of people talking, at least in my bubble, was the race in the 7th with U.S. Representative Danny Davis. He beat out four challengers in Tuesday's Democratic primary for the 7th. I mean, you wrote a piece this week reflecting on Davis's long political history. When you talk to people in the districts and folks covering the race closely, Was this result a surprise for you and for them?
I don't think the result was a surprise at all. Before Election Day, I spent about 2.5 weeks doing some research, talking to some political experts, one of those being Don Rose, who's really, he's 92 years old. He's been around for a really long time, and he really helped usher in a lot of folks that beat the Chicago machine back in the 60s and 70s. And as we know, and as it showed in voter turnout, older people are the ones that vote.
Especially in primaries.
Especially in primaries. And older people are the ones who know Danny Davis. And when they think Danny Davis, it's synonymous with West Side of Chicago. So I am not surprised that he beat out his challengers. I thought possibly it would have been more interesting if we had less competition, as in if Melissa Conyers Urban did not enter the race and it was just a showdown between him and activist Keena Collins. I think it would have been more interesting. I think it would have been a harder fought battle. But as we see in the results, Melissa Conyers Urban and Keena Collins pretty much split that vote almost evenly. And so if anything, if Davis decides to retire after this next term, the results of this race kind of foreshadow a very hard battle that will be fought to replace Davis, and kind of foreshadowing that that could be against Keena Collins and Melissa Conyers Urban.
No, that is a very good point. I mean, as you were watching this, Natalie, and you look at this, obviously they split the vote. I mean, even if you add them up, Davis was still winning, right? And he's still winning as the current vote stands. But that potential showdown in the future is one thing people are going to be watching for. But Davis's speech, I mean, all of his speeches leading up to the election, but also his speech, you know, as he you know, accepted the party win to move forward to the November election, was very much, I'm not going anywhere. That I'm the one who, like, you talk about these big endorsements I got. He said, I built those endorsements. I helped build those, some of those people's political career. You know, he said, you talk about, you know, what the West Side looks like, but also what the district looks like now, stretching from the West suburbs down to, you know, parts of Inglewood. He says, you know, I'm the best person to make that maneuvering. So for people even thinking about a retirement in 2 years, Davis is like, you know, I wouldn't push that button yet. Natalie, what is it like, you know, having, you know, spent, I imagine this point, you know, your whole life with Danny Davis as this, you know, central figure in Congress?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I didn't know his last name because, you know, family members, my grandmother, they just call him Danny. Working, you know, in the precinct in Ward 24, quite a few folks just were like, I'm just here to vote for Danny, right? Left everything else blank. So, I mean, he does run the West Side, right? I mean, and when he tells you about his political history and the things he's built, you know, he's got a point there. You know, I don't know about that man retiring anytime soon.
I was going to say, with the political experts that I talked to, they told me that Danny Davis really is likely one of those politicians that will retire in office. He's someone that's not going to let go anytime soon, most likely, and he's someone who's very likely to usher in a successor with an endorsement or sort of slowly introducing that person over time to the district.
Natalie, when you're sitting in there and you're seeing a lot of older folks come in saying, I'm just voting for Danny, is that the same spirit you see just in the district at large, on the West Side at large, even people like younger people? Is there some push to be like, we want younger blood, and maybe that's not showing up at the polls, or is Danny's presence still, you know, from young and old, just so kind of dominating?
I think, you know, what I see is, you know, in the 24th Ward and in my precinct specifically, is that a lot of the younger folks who are coming in to vote have been influenced by their parents, right? They're walking in with them. And it's very much like a family act when it is a young person and an older person. Like, you got aunts and uncles, grandmas coming in. And so I think that a lot of younger folks who are coming in to vote are not necessarily looking at, you know, how old is this person? What do they do? They're saying, hey, my mom knows him. My mom trusts him. I'm going to go ahead and vote for him. So, you know, I think it depends on, you know, the setting and you know, who's influenced you to vote, right? Is it strictly about politics or is it about keeping in folks you know and you feel familiar with? I think for a lot of the West Side, politics is about family, right? It's about people I know, people I recognize.
As we draw closer to this summer's Democratic National Convention, organizations have been preparing to protest the four-day event. Chicago got a deep, long, infamous history when it comes to conventions in our city. However, the city has denied several protest permits, really laying out where people can and cannot be in relation to major sites. Melody, Chicagoans, right? They want to get out there. This is a big opportunity to let the party know what, you know, in some ways, sort of taken for granted blue city, right, wants from the party moving forward. Appeals have been filed. What's the latest here?
The administrative judge denied the appeals from both organizations that are seeking permits to march near the DNC. The city argues that they have proved, and they, as in Chicago Department of Transportation, Chicago Police Department, that they don't have enough manpower to staff the parade slash protest route for the original location, which would take the groups near the United Center, which is where the DNC will be held.
Mm-hmm. And the groups are March for the People's Agenda and Students for Democratic Society at UIC.
Yes, and both of those groups are part of a larger coalition called March on the DNC. And that's a coalition of many different groups in Chicago, social justice groups in Chicago, calling for ceasefire in Gaza, better living conditions for people in Chicago, more equitable rights for people in Chicago, and things of that nature. And the administrative hearings judge argued that the city has proved that they can't handle the original protest route and that the route that the city offered as an alternative, which is 3 miles away from the United Center, by the way, nowhere near sight and sound of the actual convention, that somehow that is more manageable for the city than the original route. I sat in on the administrative hearing, and the Chicago Police Department couldn't actually provide numbers as to what the different staffing levels would be. The police officer that testified said hundreds of officers would be needed for the proposed march from both of the groups, but then couldn't exactly say how the difference would be with the new proposed route that the city was saying. I thought that that was pretty interesting, given if you're trying to make the argument that, oh, we can't handle this, but we can handle that, that you would bring more specifics to the table. Mm-hmm. But the administrative judge thought that that was good enough. And important to note here that administrative court hearings are different. What was argued here is, did the city actually follow the ordinance and the municipal code? It's the argument for First Amendment rights tried to be made, but the administrative judge said, hey, like, that's not what we're dealing with here. We are only dealing with, did the city actually follow the ordinance that it has in place? And the judge argued that it did.
It's so predictable. I mean, as you know, Melody mentioned, it's been a really big protesting year here in the city. I mean, for me, and just looking at the history of police at protests, even like recently, right? Thinking about what police were doing in 2020 and 2021. I mean,
to the 60s.
What were they doing?
The same script.
Exactly, other than brutalizing protesters. So when I think about them handling a protest, you know, you mean suppressing it, being violent, being aggressive. So it's really laughable, right, that they say that they can't handle these groups, right? So I hate to hear it, but it's very predictable. And I still don't think things are going to go the way that they think they're going to go for the Democratic National Convention.
I was just going to say, I was like, the likelihood that people still protest within close proximity is going to happen. And this ruling, I feel only sets the stage for the exact thing you were talking about, sort of suppression and violence under the guise that we told you where you could be and you are not where we said you can be. This space is not public during the DNC, right? This space is now sort of more heavily policed and is sort of off limits to the city of Chicago in the ways that you want it to be. Melody, is there any movement forward, right? We've seen the appeals rejected. Is there any other recourse for the group?
Yeah, the groups plan to take this to federal court where they will be able to argue that their First Amendment rights are being violated. We've seen this play out in during the 1996 Democratic Convention where groups sued and they did win. But that win, I don't know if I would necessarily call it a win, because what it did do was the Mayor Daley decided to implement protest zones where the city said, oh, we're giving you the right to protest at the United Center, but only on the stage in the parking lot for 15-minute slots for each group. And the groups today that are trying to take the city to federal court on this are saying that that's not going to fly.
Bro, that's an open mic.
Yeah, they exactly.
Said, y'all can come do some spoken word on a stage next to the UC and then get y'all ass out of here. That's wild.
I was like, this is not slam poetry. We're trying to bring some real issues at hand to the delegates and the president that will be at the DNC. And it's important to note that the Four People's Army, which is a nationally recognized group, did get a protest permit by default. The city just didn't respond within their own statute. And so they are actually going to be able to march pretty much very close to the opening of the United Center. And so I foreshadow other groups joining them in very large numbers if these other groups are not able to get the permits to do the marches that they want to. But these groups have also told me that permit or not, they're going to march. But with the permits, that does offer some level of safety that they do have the right to be there.
Every week we end all of our shows with the same thing. Some good news. We just like to make sure every episode leaves you with some cool events, some great personal news, just something happening in our guest's life that, you know, just brought some joy to us. Natalie, I'm going to start with you. What's your good news this week?
Man, I just want to shout out, you know, another writer, Chicagoan, Ariane Nettles. I'm really excited for her book, which is going to be dropping soon. It's called We Are the Culture, and it's going to be released April 16th. And I'm just super excited for that. She's been doing her press run. And it's just very cool to see her putting Black Chicago on that national platform. So I'm just super excited for that book. And I pre-ordered it like so long ago. Like, I'm just ready for the book. I just want it.
Yeah, folks definitely should recognize this name. Ariane has been on the podcast like 11 times to this point. And I just want Ariane, who I know is listening, to know how much we appreciate, how much we love her, how much we're looking forward to this book. I am excited because in May, I'm going to be sitting down at a new bookstore in Hyde Park with Ariane to talk about the book. And so once we get some more information on that, I'll definitely put that out. But Ari, we love you. We're looking forward to the book. And other people can pre-order it now. As Natalie said, it drops on April 16th. So you can find that in the show notes. Melody, let's get over to your some good news. We've been covering music festival announcements over the last few weeks. Folks like Pitchfork, Lala, Ark, you know, you covering this, right? You cover Grant Park and, you know, it's going to be booked up this summer. But the lineups that have come out so far, how you feeling about them?
I'm feeling pretty good. I will say we have some really great artists. I feel like the foreshadowing on one of these CityCast episodes about SZA coming.
Come on, shout out to
Maybe
Katrina.
Maybe she heard it. Maybe she heard it. She's like, you know what, Katrina, I'm coming for you. So I was very excited to see her as a headliner. I'm very interested in Tyler, the Creator as well. Dominic Fike, for the K-pop girlies out there. We have Stray Kids as a headliner. Third year in a row that K-pop is showing out at Lollapalooza. We also have a really good lineup at ARC coming up. We have Dom Dala, Cascade, Honey Dijon, Disclosure. All Idris Elba.
Idris Elba,
know,
go be in there.
I was like, okay, I might have to pull up.
Now,
and
bro,
then,
be DJing. That's man. He been out here.
That I just discovered he was a DJ baby about 2 years ago. I was very surprised. And then, of course, we have Sueños, which is Latin reggaeton. They have Raul Alejandro and Peso Pluma come in, Young Miko. Like that festival, I think, is going to be like in the next couple of years, one of the biggest for Latin artists. You will have to headline Sueños, and I'm very excited that that's here in Chicago. I just feel like it's going to be a really good musical summer.
It really is. Sueños is going to be at Grant Park May 25th, 26th. Pitchfork is going to be at Union Park July 19th through the 21st. I went last year. I think I'm going to have to go this year to check out Brittany Howard. Oh, my God. If you ain't familiar, that's the singer from Alabama Shakes. Her solo projects have been fired. The newest album, What Now, been on repeat. Lala is going to be August 1st through 4th at Grant Park. And their arc is going to be at Union Park August 30th through September 1st. This week, for my good news, honestly, I'm going to keep it real personal. I have been taking a voiceover class for the last couple of weeks. In the last 2 weeks, we've been like in the studio. And while I have done some voiceover work, I largely just been like doing it, just like reading. I've never really taken a class, and it's been really cool. I'm in the class with like 8 folks, and like seeing everybody like different takes on scripts. It's been really good to get in there, get some direction, get some feedback. And so that's been really nice. Y'all got any classes y'all interested in taking, like a skill y'all want to pick up, something y'all want to do?
Woodworking is, that's it. I definitely need to, I got like mid-century modern, like furniture building aspirations. So that, and same. I think like just more
furniture,
like.
Furniture's so expensive.
It's so expensive. And like some more writing, I think like flash fiction, some food writing classes for sure.
I love that. What about you, Melody?
I really want to take a ceramics class.
Come on.
I've heard those are very therapeutic, and well-made ceramics are expensive. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I'm like, why? I should just make my own. Make my own that I know that I will really like. That and like rug tufting.
I did a rug making class last year. Freestyle ceramics and rug making. They got a location in Bridgeport, and now they got one in Uptown. That's been a great place to go to. And so, no, I like this wood, woodwork, ceramics. We got aspirations over here. I like what we going for. I got to give a huge thank you to our guest today. Please, wherever you are, give a round of applause, whether you're listening at home, if you're listening in the car, for freelance writer Natalie Christian Frazier and Block Club Chicago's Melody Mercado. It has been a true pleasure. Thank y'all for making time.
For sure. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
One more thing before we get out of here. I got to give a huge thank you to the people who make CityCast Chicago possible. Our executive producer is Simone Alisea. Our producer is Michelle Navarro. Our newsletter editor is Sydney Madden. Our roving producer this week was Elizabeth Kama. The music we all love is from Sam Thousand, All the Kimonos, and Mark Greenberg from the Mayfair Workshop. And my last thank you, like always, is for you. I appreciate you being here, whether you listen once a week, if you listen to all 5 episodes, or if it's every now and then when you got some time. Thank you for making time for CityCast Chicago, for reading Hey Chicago. We're going to be back here bright and early on Monday. If you like what we're doing, come on back. I'll talk to you then. Peace.